Matt Hicks, the FF Educator, joined as always by John Lobb, the Gridiron Scholar. And this is our wide receiver and quarterback sleeper episode, building off of that running back and tight end sleeper episode that we dropped last week. The goal of this episode here, we're going to break down seven wide receivers, two quarterbacks here that we just feel like deserve to be in more of the common discourse. We didn't get to cover them in the rookie profiles, but they're likely to be selected in a 48-round Superflex league. And we want to make sure that you know where or when or if to draft these guys in your rookie drafts. There's definitely a few that are atop of me and John's, you know, hidden gem list. Those guys that we're really excited to get into. And others that, you know, we might want to steer you away from. Make sure you get them at the right price. You don't reach for them. So with that being said, make sure you drop a comment. Make sure you give the video a like and subscribe to the Rookie Big Board. As we approach rookie draft season, we have a whole lot more content to come. So you're going to want to make sure that you are subscribed. All right. And a quick shout out also to all of our listeners. Those Apple Podcast reviews have been coming in ever since I've been throwing shade at them. So we see you. You're jumping. Spotify's still in the lead, but you're catching up. So a big shout out to our Apple Podcast listeners as well. All right. With that being said, we're going to start with the University of Washington here, and we're going to go with wide receiver Jalen Polk first.
Matt, we didn't see much of Jalen Polk the first couple years, 4 years when he was on college campuses. Partly he transferred into Washington, and he was third man in the pecking order behind Jalen McMillan and Rome Odunze. But this year, McMillan was injured, and Polk really got an opportunity to shine, Matt. He's 6'2", 204. I don't think most people realize how big of a receiver he is. I do project him more as an inside slot receiver. He might be able to play some Z, but I don't really think he's like your classic X. He has a nice catch rate at 64%. Should be a little bit higher, but I'm okay with that. Team aerial dominator, we have to put it in context. And McMillan was not on the field. Polk dominated targets, Matt. He was unbelievable. But the 22% is over the entirety of the season when McMillan was also in the lineup. So that's why the number's a little low overall. Also, why do I project him mostly as a slot? Receiving yards per team pass attempt, 2.02. He wasn't getting a lot of big-time deep downfield receptions. That was more Odunze. And I have to admit, a little disappointed. I was thinking he'd be a little quicker and faster, the 4.52 in the 40. That's nice. I mean, it doesn't discount him, but it really doesn't make him a deep vertical threat. Matt, I think folks are going to go early day three. He might sneak into the end of the third round, but I have my questions there. What's your film study say?
Yeah, with Jalen Polk, I feel like I have been consistently a little bit lower than some folks on him. But I think he's a well-rounded wideout, right? I think he does a lot of things well. I struggle to see that one elite or even high-end trait with Polk, but that doesn't mean he doesn't project well into a contributor role in the NFL. And that's where I see Polk. I think he's a shorthanded wideout. You know, you put the ball on target, he's going to go ahead. He's going to pull that ball in. I was impressed with his ability to hold on to the ball well through contact. Of course, now he's you know, matching physicality with Pac-12 defenders primarily, which, you know, isn't the most impressive of secondaries, but it's still pretty impressive the way he holds on to the ball through contact. I like his release off the line of scrimmage. I think he gets a good first step, you know, especially against off coverage. He's quick. He's fluid. He navigates around the field well. He wins at all three levels of the field. You mentioned it. I think, you know, a slot role, a flanker role, you know, at best is probably what we're looking for. I just don't know that I'm ever going to be able to plug Polk into a spreadsheet and get to 80, 90 targets. But, you know, as your flex spot, as a guy that's bench depth on your roster, if you can draft him in the mid to late third round, you know, I think that's an appropriate spot to take Polk. As long as you draft him with realistic expectations as kind of a rotate in flex type guy, I'm definitely good with Jalen Polk being drafted on your team in the mid rounds. I got to tell you, when you're talking draft capital, John, I'm getting Josh Palmer vibes from this film evaluation, right? Like, consistently good. If he gets the volume, he'll perform consistently well. Put him in your flex spot. Remember, Palmer snuck into the back end of day two. I could see Polk doing the same, or like you mentioned, going early day three. Now, we buried the lead a little bit because I know John is ready to wind up here and take a big swing on this wide receiver. We've talked about him a decent amount through draft season. And I got to tell you, John, I know the rookie big board patrons have been talking about him a ton in the Discord. So we are all very excited to hear about the wide receiver out of UCF by way of Alabama, Javon Baker.
Well, Matt, you just, it's my man crush throughout this draft process. I started studying him in detail in preparation for our Senior Bowl episode. And I have to admit, I fell in love and nothing has gotten off of, I have not gotten off of him. And right now, Matt, I've said this a bunch of times. I think he's the best value in dynasty drafts because you don't have to absolutely use a lot of draft capital. Man, he's basically a late third round. You could get lucky top of the fourth round. I mean, I've seen rankings with him between 18 and 23. Now, you got to go see where I have him rank him. It's way above consensus. But what we try to preach here, find value. If you do not have to pick Javon Baker in the second round, unless we see incredible movement. Right now, Matt, I've been getting him at the end of the third round in my drafts. Absolutely love him. What do I like best? Film study wise, I love his attitude. I've said it before, I'll say it again. He's got that Terrell Owens, Zay Flowers, Chad Johnson, the alpha male, give me the dog, or give me the ball, I'm alpha dog. He barks a lot, no pun intended. And if you're an opponent, you're not going to like Javon Baker. I got a feeling defensive backs are not going to like him. But if you're his teammate and you're his quarterback, you like Javon Baker. I also project him as a classic X boundary receiver. He's not in the big two when you talk Odunze and Marvin Harrison, even Brian Thomas. So he's definitely a tier below them in my book. But if you want a discounted X receiver as a franchise, I love him. And what really did it for Matt was what I call the trifecta. There are three numbers that I can't believe he reached. What they are is ADOT, 17.1. That's incredible. His yards per reception this year, Matt, 17.3. That is just absolutely silly. And his receiving yards per team pass attempt, 3.11. It is rare, Matt, to get a receiver to have all three of those line up that high above my benchmarks. Matt, I love him. I know you've broken down the film. What should people know after you looked at
him? Yeah, I like Javon Baker. You know, I see the upside. Not quite as high as John on Baker, but he's a boundary presence. And whenever you have a boundary presence paired with some athleticism, that equals upside, right? And that's the type of equation we're looking for. So let's get into the film here. For me, I mentioned, you know, along the boundary is where I think he works best. I think he's got really nice downfield acceleration. Running in a straight line, he feels the boundary. He understands where to position his body to win in contested catch situations. He tracks the ball well. He has apt vertical ability. All right. My man can go up and get that ball. He's confident. You mentioned he's a little bit of a trash talker. That confidence carries through. He's got physical hands. He goes up and snags the ball. He's not letting it come to him. And he's got a long frame. So you pair that long frame with vertical athleticism, and it really helps to extend your catch radius. And that's something that we can translate, right? We can see that working at the next level in the NFL. But beyond that, you know, there's a little bit of yak upside to his game as well. you know, you'll see multiple examples that he, you know, beats off the first step, beats that defensive back off the first step. He gets the ball, and then he uses that athleticism and that speed to gain, you know, a set amount of yards after the catch. And if he's got to step on a defender, you know, with the ball in his hands, it's going to be hard to catch Javon Baker. So the question's always, you know, how do you project him? You know, what's the type of NFL projection that you can put for Javon Baker? You know, some of the guys that come to mind, right? Gabe Davis. Maybe it's the UCF helmet there. You think about the way that Christian Watson performed in his first year, right? That high A dot. You think about even George Pickens a little bit. The big question will be, if we can put Javon Baker in an offense where it's realistic to get him 5 or 6 touchdowns as a rookie, if he carries a high level A dot, which does tend to translate to the next level, we could be really looking at somebody who is a smash value in the fourth round. And that's where I want to get Javon Baker. I want to go for that upside. I want to lean into it in about the fourth round of my rookie draft. So, John, we went West Coast to East Coast. We're going to go back to the West Coast here. We're going to go back to the purple and gold. And let's talk about, I'm going to call him the other wide receiver at Washington because it seems like that's where consensus has gotten to. But I think it's important for everybody to know, if you've been watching college football, you know, tracking this offense since Jalen McMillan joined it, like me and John have, it started off as Jalen McMillan was the wide receiver one on the Washington Huskies, you know, going 3 years back now.
Matt, last year there were people who were taking Jalen McMillan ahead of Rome Odunze in Devy/CFF drafts. I mean, I did have Odunze ranked higher, but it was very close. In CFF drafts, I was taking McMillan. He was a cheaper, you could get him in a lower round. So I had a lot of McMillan. He's definitely getting overlooked. He has moved up and down my board a lot since last September. He did get injured this year. So if you're looking at volume counting stats the last season, it might affect your ranking. But I don't think enough people are watching the 2022 season, Matt. He was great. He was literally like 92% of Rome Odunze from a production standpoint. And I understand the criticism. Odunze was on the outside. McMillan was in the slot. McMillan did have advantageous matchups. So there is a little bit of what the competition, what was the one-on-one matchups. I understand that. And I do think he's an inside receiver, Matt. I don't look at him as an X, despite being 6'1 and 197. I think he could thrive as a third receiver on that inside slash slot. 164 career receptions. What I love about him, 71% catch rate, Matt. He's got really good hands. I mean, in the middle of the field, if you don't have a tight end, if you're a team, and there's probably, let's say there's 15 teams in the NFL who I say have really weak pass catching tight ends. I think you can play McMillan on third down in the slot, and he can be very productive for you in the middle of the field. We talked about Javon Baker, the trifecta. Well, McMillan's a little bit of the opposite. Receiving yards per route or per pass is 13.1, not unbelievable. Receiving yards per pass attempt, this is where I believe he's a slot receiver, Matt, 1.91. So he's below my benchmark, and his A dot is 9.6. There is no one definitive statistic, but those are numbers that I look at, especially when I'm looking for value. But Matt, what's he going now? Late fourth, early fifth round in Dynasty? I'll take that on the upside. What does your film study say about the overlooked Husky?
Yeah, I like Jalen McMillan. You know, we've been watching him for a few years now. The word that comes to mind for me is sharp. I think he's a sharp route runner. He wins with a sharp first step. I love when my wide receivers win right off the line of scrimmage when they get that good release. I think that translates well to the next level. I think he's got sticky hands. You know, you see really reliable hands for him. You know, was working well to snag in some of those off-target passes coming from Penix. He was comfortable working in traffic. I think that is a real upside here when you're thinking about somebody who's either going to play in the flanker role or in the slot role. You know, very comfortable working over the middle of the field. You know, Penix was often knocked for being, you know, inaccurate, not leading his receivers well over the middle of the field. It did lead to, you know, there's a few examples of McMillan snagging a ball, getting popped, you know, just kind of being led right into a defender. And he holds on to the ball. Like, he secures it. So he's physical. He's tough. After the catch, I think he's a twitchy runner. He's got good athleticism. He shows elusiveness. He can break a guy in open space. So I think that there's you know, some upside here to McMillan. But you're right, John. He's not that guy that anybody gets super excited about. So just in terms of ADP, although I think everybody has a good impression of him, he just seems to keep falling and keep falling. So if McMillan is around there in the mid to back half of the fourth round, I think you're going to get a really good prospect. I don't think he's going to be there, though, because I think there's a decent shot he ends up day two in the NFL draft. And that should push up his ADP a decent bit. Folks, rookie draft season is quickly approaching. You want to be able to get ahead of your league mates. There is no better resource than patreon.com/rookiebigboard. We have in-depth rookie rankings, over 76 full film evaluations and counting on this class. Proven insight, proven track record of that success. We have our Rookie Big Board Discourse for personalized advice for your roster. And we have our 2024 Rookie Guide that will be updated with 2024 in-season projections for every rookie the day after the NFL draft. You got to get ahead of your league mates, and you got to do it by heading over to patreon.com/rookiebigboard. It's just $5 a month, folks. $5 to beat out your league mates, win your rookie drafts, and you could actually get 15% off now if you sign up for that annual subscription over at patreon.com/rookiebigboard. But I'm excited to get into our next wide receiver here. It's somebody who, you know, after watching his film review, after getting a lot of live watch in on the Louisville offense this year, I'm excited about Jamari Thrash, the wide receiver out of Louisville by way of Georgia Southern. So, John, why don't you go ahead and kick us off here, and then I'll be ready to dig in fully on him.
Jamari Thrash took a risk and moved up from Sun Belt, which is a group of five, and he moved up to the Power Five, and that, I would say, over the first week, 8 weeks of last season, he was a top five wide receiver in college fantasy football. Now, his numbers dipped at the end. The offense, tougher competition. I think he was a little bit injured late in the season, so the volume stats aren't there. But if you really want to see some superb wide receiver, check out his film like the first 5 weeks of the season. He was really impressive. And he was coming off an all Sun Belt season the year before where he had over 1,000 yards. There are things that my model likes about him, Matt. He has a 46% aerial dominator. So despite being lean at 5'11", 185, he kind of has proven that he can take a heavy workload, but he did get nicked up at the end. Receiving yards per team pass attempt, Matt, 3.77. So there are numbers that pop here where I'm like, wow, that's very interesting. Now, level of competition matters. His ADOT's 11.1, which seems a little bizarre to me, but I think he gets a lot of yak yards, right? The numbers are there because he averages 15.6 yards per reception, but his ADOT's low. So I like when they're in sync with each other, but that just means he's very good with the ball in his hands. I definitely think he can play special teams at the NFL level, Matt. We've been talking about this a lot over the last couple of weeks with the new changes of the punt kick, or more specifically, the kickoff returns. I do believe there are teams that are going to like Jamari Thrash. I think you can plug and play him as your special team contributor from day one. What's your film study say about Thrash? Because I know you like him, Matt.
Yeah, you know, what's really exciting for me about Thrash right off the bat, right? He dominates for Georgia Southern. He leads that offense. I believe he goes over 1,200 yards in his final year before transferring up. And then, you know, he transfers up to the Louisville offense and immediately steps in as the X receiver, right? He's the dude right away from week one. I think that says a lot. He leads the team in every receiving category, basically, right? So on paper, you mentioned the stats, you know, double check mark right off the bat. But then you dig into the actual film and you just see a lot more checkbox ticks, right? So I think he's an electric slot weapon. I mentioned he was the X. He was playing along the boundary. He's moving all around the field for Louisville last year. He's going to move inside to the slot at the next level. I feel pretty confident projecting that based on his frame. But he's twitchy. He wins with an array of tools. I think he separates really well, both off the line of scrimmage and through the second level of the field. So he's got a nice first step, but he's got smooth speed, and he will separate into the deep field. You watch Jamari Thrash play, you're going to see him, you know, oftentimes 2 to 3 steps ahead of a defender as he's in stride 20, 30 yards downfield. I think he's got reliable hands. You don't see drops on his tape. You see him making pretty difficult catches. You see him reacting well to off-target passes. You see him tracking the ball very well, controlling his body, despite the fact that I think he's a pretty quick runner, right? I would define him as quicker than he is fast. So he relies on lateral agility to make guys miss. He relies on his ability to get in and through cuts to separate through the midfield like I was talking about. And then after the catch, he's pretty slippery with the ball in his hands. He's a little bit of a leaner frame. So, you know, he relies on elusiveness, but then a decent amount of contact balance. He's hard to wrap up at first go. So I think Jamari Thrash can win before the catch. I think he can win after the catch. If you put him in one of these offenses where, you know, the slot wide receiver really kind of has run of the field, you know, two more prominent guys along the boundary opening up the middle of the field, Jamari Thrash could be a really dangerous player and a really dangerous projection. I think in most 4-round drafts, you'd be going undrafted at this point in time. I'm not letting him leave my drafts. If he's around in the 4th round, I'm taking him, you know, 10 out of 10 times. But especially if you have a 5 or 6 round rookie draft and Jamari Thrash is there in the 5th, I think you have to jump on that opportunity. Another guy who could be around, again, if you're playing in 5 or 6 round rookie drafts, who I think is just going way too under the radar because of primarily the injuries, is Texas A&M's Anaya Smith. I think Anaya Smith is a much better prospect than he's being given credit for. And if we're going to talk about that prime deep sleeper type guy, I think he is the definition of this episode, at least in terms of my eyes, what I think of as like that true sleeper type guy.
I couldn't agree with you more, Matt. I'm very interested in draft capital because if you look into Anaya Smith's background, there's some challenges there that some teams may take them off the board. I don't want to get into off the field. I like just you and I look at their on-field production profile film study. I like them a ton as a football player. However, there are teams, and I understand they're going to look at him from a holistic, and that means off the field perspective. So if he gets past the 5th round, Matt, I'm very concerned about what the NFL thinks of him. Because I think the film studies late 3rd round, early 4th round. And I do want to say, he is not Devin Achane. I graded Achane higher. I've heard people say that because if you've watched him, he lined up in the backfield, Matt. He was in the slot. He was outside. He is your, I hate to use this overused term, he's an offensive weapon. You want to get this man the ball in space. You can do it on returns. You can do it in the passing game. He can handle 5 or 6 carries. Hey, he might even be able to start one game in the backfield and give him 12 to 15 carries if you really needed him. Nice catch percentage, 66%. Matt, you and I, we've watched a lot of Texas A&M. My friends, look at the quarterbacks at Texas A&M. They haven't been great. So that's a nice catch percentage in context. He has a nice aerial dominator, 25%, so I'm happy with that. His ADOT, 10.2, I think, 10.4. That's in context, Matt. He was playing running back. He has a lot of quick passes, screen passes, you know, the dump-off passes. So that's going to bring the ADOT down as a receiver. Matt, he's one of the most fascinating players I agree. I think he's probably going undrafted in some five-round drafts. But if he's there late in the fifth round, I like him. Draft capital is going to tell me what the NFL thinks of him. Why do you like him so much looking at your film study, Matt?
He's an exciting player to me. You know, we talk about versatility. I think it's a real positive, especially if you're thinking about a guy who's going to go on day three of the NFL draft, right? You want versatility. You want options. You want to be able to project, you know, a few different potential paths to productivity. And with Anaya Smith, I think you get exactly that, right? You put him in the slot. We're talking about somebody who's fluid, who's twitchy. I love that he gets going quick right off the snap, right? He gets to top speed very quickly, and it allows him to separate consistently in the short field. So you look at Anaya Smith in terms of being a wide receiver, you're going to see a lot of drags. You're going to see a lot of slants. You're going to see curls, some dig routes, some out, you know, so he's really focusing on that short part of the field. And you talked about that ADOT, John, that backs that up, right? But he's shredding. He's winning. He's catching the ball. He's using reliable hands. He's separating right off the bat. And that can be a really helpful tool for a quarterback to have underneath. It was very helpful for those quarterbacks at Texas A&M, like you mentioned, John, you know, consistently struggled. He lines up in the backfield. He lines up in the slot. He lines up slot, you know, split out. So he's all over the field. But I like him best as a special teams player. You know, he's a proven punt returner. He has amazing accelerations as a kick returner. You know, he's returned kicks for touchdowns. You look at that new format. It's almost like the new kickoff format is made for him, John. You know, like this is so we talk about this all the time, right? If you're looking at a guy with lower draft capital, who's going to be, you know, he's going to start off on your bench in fantasy drafts. You know, you're drafting him to be a bench player. You want somebody who can contribute on special teams because that's going to keep him on the 53-man roster and injuries happen. So as injuries happen, he's already there. He's learning the offense in practice. He's going to get his first shot at targets. And Anaya Smith is that guy for me. So there's a lot of good wide receivers. Maybe he doesn't make the cut for you in the first four rounds, but maybe he's a priority ad for you in free agency, you know, when it's time to put those fab bids on. And I got to tell you, folks, he's probably still only going to cost a dollar on your fab, right? If he doesn't go with, you know, if he goes undrafted, or if you're playing in deeper drafts, like a lot of folks are, you know, even a 16 teamer that goes four rounds, Anaya Smith should absolutely be in play as you approach the end of that draft. Now, John, I mentioned off the top here, you know, we want to make sure we hit on guys that are going to likely get drafted here. So that's my disclaimer before we talk about Johnny Wilson out of Florida State, because I wouldn't exactly call him a sleeper that I am interested in drafting, but I do think we need to talk about him because I have seen him go in rookie mocks in the second round. I've seen him go in rookie mocks in the third round. And I just want to make sure our listeners are making educated choices if they're thinking about drafting Johnny Wilson.
Before I even break down Johnny Wilson, I was thinking today, preparing for today's show, do you know Arizona State at one time had Jaden Daniels, Ricky Pearsall, Johnny Wilson, and Rashad White in the backfield? The amount of talent that Arizona State had, and they didn't do anything with it. I guess that's another podcast we could have for another day.
I was going to say, you know, Herm Edwards' whole thing was that he was going to turn Arizona State into an NFL factory. And in his defense, ironically, he's got a lot of guys going to the league, just not from his program.
Yeah, give him credit. I don't know what happened with the culture, but once he got there, but boy, he did find NFL talent at the skill positions. Johnny Wilson. I've done way too much thinking about Johnny Wilson this offseason because, Matt, I don't see it. And I know there are Johnny Wilson stands out there. I have him very low. And the reason I have it, there is just some – I don't like the film. So let me just say that. I never thought that Johnny Wilson was the best player on the field for the Seminoles. I thought he was good. I thought he was okay, right? Like nothing that I ever was amazed by. And there are people who just absolutely love him. I don't. 6'6", 237, Matt. That body type, there's not many who I can rely on. The first guy to come to mind is Harold Carmichael of the 70s and 80s with the Eagles, my friends. And most viewers probably don't know who Harold Carmichael is. So it just tells you something about where he is. That body type, Matt, might take too many hits at the NFL level. I plugged him in my model, 58% catch rate. I don't think he has very good hands. 18% team aerial dominator. For a player who looks like an X or boundary receiver, he doesn't. I'm looking for 30% aerial dominator. He doesn't even hit 20%. And Matt, for a big explosive athlete, 1.52 receiving yards per team pass attempt. That he's like getting dump off passes as a big elite receiver. I get the athleticism. There is athleticism in there. I get it. I see it. I have glimpses of it. But Matt, I'm not going to have Johnny Wilson at this price in Dynasty. There are people who are going to way overtake him for me. But I know you mentioned it. What do you like or dislike in the Johnny Wilson film?
Yeah, give me an 8-round rookie draft. I'm not taking Johnny Wilson. The number one rule that we talk about all the time with wide receivers, and it sounds so simple, it sounds so basic. I like when my wide receivers can catch the ball. And Johnny Wilson's got stone hands, man. Like, throw, you know, the old Stephen A. Smith clip about Kwame Brown? Like, yeah. He can catch. That's what I feel like about Johnny Wilson, man. He's got inconsistent hands, so many drops. It's mental drops. It's just poor handwork. It's body catches. He's got, you know, he just can't catch the ball. You know, you mentioned it. There's flashes of athleticism. You know, he's got that big man behavior, right? He's got a large catch radius. So I get it. You watch the highlights. Oh, man, the highlights. You could convince yourself of Johnny Wilson. But, folks, if that's what you're going off of, please just watch a full game. Just pick one game. Just one full Florida State game. I don't care what it is. It can be any of them. And you're going to understand what I'm talking about here. More pressing to me, you know, he lets defensive backs hang all over him. And so, you know, we talk about athletic. He's not fast. You know, when defensive backs are hanging all over you, you're not going to get away with that at the NFL level. I don't care if you have 5 inches on them. They'll get to you, right? And he's got slow footwork. He's got rounded footwork. Let's keep it simple here. It's just not there. It's just not there with Johnny Wilson.
And Matt, we both like separation. I mean, I might make some, right? I will make exceptions at times, but Johnny Wilson, I'm not making the exception. There's no separation on Johnny Wilson.
It's not happening. It's just not. But let's finish wide receivers on a brighter note here. And it's almost appropriate that Jermaine Burton is the last wide receiver we're going to talk about, because I feel like he's just been an afterthought this entire draft process. And every time I watch the Burton tape, I like the Burton tape. You know, I'm a little thrown off with the productivity, but I like the tape. I can see an NFL team liking the tape. Every time I go back to his, you know, his review draft, I'm like, I just want to scooch him up another slot in the rankings. And it seems like he's slowly crawling his way up. And so I definitely think he's a legitimate, good, late-round target in your rookie drafts. But I'll let you lead off here with Jermaine Burton and your thoughts on him.
He bothered me because he disappeared too often, Matt, in games. I mean, I think there were games where he might have only had 3 targets. And we're talking about the young man played at Georgia. He earned a ring for the national championship Bulldogs. And then he goes to Alabama when, let's be honest, Matt, the last 2 years, the Alabama locker room has not been incredible for the Crimson Tide. So there should have been more opportunity. And you could say what you want about Jalen Milroe, the quarterback. We'll talk about it, I'm sure, in the Debbie season. You know, so there might be some of it is the quarterbacking, but that, the volume numbers and the targets are very low. Yet, as this process has developed, at the combine of 4.45 in the 40, I did not expect that.
That's good.
I know he was a so-called home run hitter, and I guess he is, right? I can't argue that he's not. He led the SEC with over 20 yards per reception this year, and he averaged over 18 yards during the career. But Matt, it's kind of interesting. When I watch him, I don't think he gets a lot of separation. Like, he's not like your Garrett Wilson. You know, we were talking about Malik Nabers earlier in this year. He's getting deep, but there's usually someone on him, right? Unless maybe there's a slip up or someone trips up, or maybe there's a scheme to pick him open deep. So I don't think he's that elite second level separator for a home run hitter. But 67% catch rate, I like that. 2.46 yards per team pass attempt is nice. He's 6 feet, 194. What I've come to the conclusion, Matt, is the NFL is going to like him more than I do. I think with the Alabama-Georgia pedigree, the high scouting ranking coming out of high school, they're going to look at him, and they're going to look at him as a deep threat. He might have more value to an offense as a vertical threat than he might actually have targets or value in fantasy. I don't know if he'll ever get 80 targets, Matt. I don't see it. He hasn't done it at the collegiate level. I have some questions about separation. I like him. I think the NFL likes him more than I do. What's your film study say about him?
For Burton, I see a lot of flashes of X potential. I think if you take the best five catches of every wide receiver in this class and splice them up into a reel, Jermaine Burton's in the top three of that group, right? If you put his best catches out there, you can really convince yourself that this guy can be, you know, not necessarily even just an X, but just a real presence, right, that defenses have to pay attention to. I like the way he plays along the boundary. I think he's got really sticky hands. I think he's got good concentration. He tracks the ball well. He reacts well to off-target passes. You mentioned it. He doesn't have great separation, and that's where those hands come into play, because he does win in contested catch. He does win in contested catch situations, all right? He's a deep field specialist. You absolutely got that right. Which is why I think that we get frustrated by that inconsistency, right? You think about it, you can rationalize it. Georgia, real inconsistency for any wide receiver in that offense, especially somebody who's going to be looking downfield. Alabama, it's frustrating that he wasn't more of the X guy, but with Jalen Milroe, you know, throwing the ball into the deep field, that's not where Jalen Milroe was ever going to be successful and ever going to thrive, right? So you can explain it away. I think he's got some sharp footwork. I think he's got some shake. You know, he can really shake a defensive back off of him. He can win in the open field after the catch. So this is going to be a type of guy here where I'm going to listen to the NFL. If he goes round six, I'm out. If he goes round three, I'm in. I don't do that with every prospect, but some of these guys where I can really see it, but I'm not sure, I'm going to listen to what the NFL tells me. This is the type of guy, John. Everybody wants somebody, you know, wants the Chiefs to draft a wide receiver in the first round. I don't think they're going to do it. Yeah.
I agree.
He's the guy.
He's a total Andy Reid guy, like fourth round, like Jermaine Burton.
And then his ADP is going to skyrocket. That's exactly what's going to happen. All right. So with that being said here, we're going to transition to our quarterbacks. We have two quarterbacks that we want to hit on. One I'm really excited about, and one I feel we are obligated to discuss. But let's go ahead. Let's start with the exciting one here, because this is legitimately my sleeper quarterback. This is the guy who in the fourth round, I'm going to be soaking up as much exposure as I can. And it's quarterback Michael Pratt out of Tulane.
In Superflex, he's clearly worth a pick in the fourth round. I would argue in a one quarterback, it depends. I'd have to look at where you are, but in a super flex, there's no question. If you want to see a good game by a quarterback, and I mean toughness, check out when Tulane played Oklahoma. I think it was the kickoff the 2022 season, Matt. Michael Pratt at Tulane was overmatched against the Oklahoma Sooners. I believe they were in Stillwater in that game. That was a good game. Tulane, I think, almost pulled the upset. Or check out the game in the Cotton Bowl against USC. This year, he was a little bit injured. I think he missed four games at one point in the middle of the season. You're going to hear one thing, I believe, about Michael Pratt, the team that drafts him. They're going to say he's a winner. And there is truth to that. I mean, he did take a Tulane program, and he took him to new heights since. The coach who was at the Ohio State and what?
No, not Willie Fritz, sorry.
No, the other guy before. He won two championships, one with Ohio State, one with Florida. Why can't I think of his name?
Urban Meyer?
Anyways. Yeah, Urban Meyer. He was at Tulane. That was the best years at Tulane since Urban Meyer. That's how good Michael Pratt's done. He has NFL size, Matt, 6'2", 210. The numbers are good, not spectacular. You would hope from a G5 program his numbers would be a little bit better. But let's say this. He's played since freshman year, Matt, 46 career games. So there's a lot to be said about his volume numbers over the long term. Some numbers that I like, Matt. That interception to touchdown interception ratio, 90-26. That's crazy impressive. His rushing equity, he's really good. 17% was his season high, and he had over 1,100 yards rushing on the ground. Michael Pratt is a dual threat quarterback. He will have a backup role, might start as a third stringer. But if, there's lots of quarterbacks who get a chance in their third or fourth year, he has a nice skill set. I would love to see him like in San Francisco or Baltimore, where he could sit and learn for a while with a good coaching staff. What does your film study say about Michael Pratt?
I think Pratt is a real competitive leader. You mentioned it. He's punched up consistently throughout his college career. You know, he had the option. He could have gone to a lot of Power 5 programs in his final year where he decided to return to Tulane. But he wanted to be there. He wanted to lead that offense, make that push. And Tulane, you know, for folks who don't follow college football, has been one of the premier Group of 5 teams over the last couple of years with Michael Pratt there. But as a quarterback, I think he's got everything you need for him to be that sleeper quarterback prospect. The mechanics are there. He's got a smooth throwing motion. He's got a quick release. I love his release. He's got clean footwork. He throws on platform. Does he have the biggest arm in the class? No. But he does have enough arm talent to win in the NFL. Folks, I can't emphasize this enough. You don't need to have a 55-yard cannon, right, to be successful, especially in today's NFL. But he's got the arm talent. He adjusts velocity well. He understands passing lanes well. He leads his receivers with good anticipation, and he's not given enough credit for his ability to win on the ground. He's got burst as a runner. He's elusive as a runner. He's willing to drop his shoulder and be physical while on the ground. You know, he's got that ability to win in the red zone. You know, you look at a team, like the Saints, he could land on, you know, play behind a little bit. Denver, if they don't attack the quarterback position early, you know, I think he would beat out Jarrett Stidham if he ended up on that roster, right? So there's a few different, options here where even if Michael Pratt isn't the guy right away, you can see him taking over a team or being that reliable QB2 where, you know, if the guy in front of him gets injured and he gets his shot, he might not give that job back. But let's finish here with Joe Milton. I did feel like it was important to touch on Joe Milton because I do think folks are still, what's the word? I don't want to use the word tricked. That feels wrong. They're a little enchanted by him. You know, you see the big arm, you see the athleticism, and you just say to yourself, you know, I think I could get this right. I got to tell you, folks, that's what Jim Harbaugh said at Michigan before he benched Joe Milton. And that's what Josh Heupel said at Tennessee after he made him the starter over Hendon Hooker and quickly realized that was a mistake. And it's what Josh Heupel said for a second time when he really stopped letting Joe Milton throw the ball much last season. I think there will be an NFL team on day 3 who convinces themselves of that same thing. If I could just be the one to put it all together. I don't know if he'll ever put it all together, John, but you know, he's definitely worth the discussion here as we tie up the episode.
One of my favorite parts of the draft process, Matt, is listening to people who have never seen college football, and you can tell. And when reports first came out about Joe Milton in the Senior Bowl, people are like, oh, the size, the arm strength. And I'm like, we know that. Have you ever watched a game of Joe Milton? I mean, the vast majority are going to think they can fix Joe Milton. Matt, I mean, I think he's a sixth round flyer, seventh round flyer in an NFL draft, the quarterback. You would have to expect a massive leap for him to be able to succeed at the NFL level. I mean, Harbaugh loved him. There was all types of positive stuff coming out of Michigan. He started one season, I think it's 2020. It was a long time ago. He eventually got benched and he left Michigan. He was supposed to start ahead of Hendon Hooker at Tennessee. Didn't he start the opening game and Heupel pulled the plug on him? And what did Heupel do? He literally did not want to go with the freshman quarterback. So what did he do this year, Matt? He hid Joe Milton. Let's just be honest. They ran the ball. They had a three-headed monster in the backfield. They kept the wide spread. They kept the big offensive splits on the line. And they ran the ball. Joe Milton, yes, you're going to be tantalized by the athleticism and the arm strength. Quarterbacking is much more than that. My model says there's some warning signs here. Passing efficiency, 146.1. You and I have seen that, Matt. 37-11 touchdown interception ratio. He could have had that if things had worked in one season under Heupel. That's his five-year career numbers there, folks. Matt, I'm not going to have any Josh Heupel. I know people are tantalized. What's your film analysis say?
Yeah, it's just too tempting to even entertain, right? Because you can look at it, you're going to see a huge arm. You're going to see that he can rip tight spirals. He is comfortable working in the pocket at times. He's got impressive mobility for his size, but he struggles to process. He struggles with decision-making. And the inconsistency, the accuracy is just wildly inconsistent. And you could try to explain it away, but it's never gotten better. It's never improved. You know, you never know. I hope for Milton's sake he finds that coach that gets him there, but it's just not a realistic investment to make. It's not a smart use of your third or fourth round rookie pick. It's probably not even a good use of your fifth round rookie pick, right? So just let Joe Milton go by the wayside here. Don't be the one to make that investment on him. You have better uses of your roster spots, right? But John, no better use of your time as you're preparing for your rookie drafts than to head on over to patreon.com/rookiebigboard to get insight into our in-depth rookie rankings, dynasty rankings, Devy rankings, our 2024 rookie guide, which will be updated the Sunday after the NFL draft, and personalized advice via our Discord and one-on-one draft strategy Zoom calls. All of that's available over at patreon.com/rookiebigboard for just $5 a month, or you can get 15% off now. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Rookie Big Board.